let's begin by talking about the NCAA basketball tournament. You and I have talked about this before, that we're all enablers for this big machine that is college sports in America. But then a UMBC comes along, or even a Loyola, and we forget about the business side of things for a while.
Yeah, the 16 versus 1 thing finally happened, and it was an interesting school for sure at UMBC. I had seen them play to get into the tournament on television, beating Vermont on a last-second shot by Jarius Lyles, and fell in love a little bit with the point guard, K.J. Mora, who is listed at 5'8", 140, and probably is more like 5'6", and a half, and 135. But they were a nice little story, and that was good, and we got that one out of the way. Checkpoint that one. That won't be a talking point before the tournament, as it has been for all these years. So that was good. And Loyola, an old friend reappears, if you will, because they've only been in the tournament twice, and the first time they were in, they won it in 1963, and then they were in 85. I happened to cover that down in Providence. I can remember sitting in a hotel room with Coach Gene Sullivan doing a story, and they were beaten finally by Georgetown, but that was led by Al Frederick Hughes.
That's right.
Who was drafted by the Spurs, but didn't make it. I wasn't surprised. And Andre Carter. But anyway, it's a nice story. And who knew that we were going to have an NBA and NCAA tournament in which the face of the tournament would be a 98-year-old nun?
That's right. She's great. And
she's enjoying. What I love about it is, she enjoying every minute of this or what? She is lapping this up, and that's great.
And you mentioned Lyles and the crew from Maryland, Baltimore County, and I believe, up until last Friday's win, their most famous alum was Kathleen Turner.
Well, you know, who's kind of fallen off the map. And yeah, I guess so. You know, that's essentially was a commuter school. But now they're getting some publicity. It turns out they're very big in chess.
Yes.
And President Rabowski, as opposed to Al the Mad Hungarian Rabowski, this is President Rabowski. Is a very renowned educator who has done a tremendous job in elevating that school academically. And so good for them to get some publicity if that's the case.
Remarkable performance in the NBA last night from, I would say, an unlikely source, Dwight Howard, turning in a 30-30 game.
One of my least favorite players of all time, and probably my contemporary least favorite player, is Dwight Howard, who I think is a starter on the all-squandered talent team. And who has never taken full advantage of his immense physical gifts. Then suddenly, now he's having a decent statistical year, but he's always been good about statistics as opposed to winning. And they're all out there. I tweeted out, it's been a while, I would guess, since the last 30-30, and it turns out that if the accurate information I've gotten is correct, the last 30-30 was Kevin Love in 2010. And then before that, you got to go back to Moses back in the 80s. But the good for him, 30-30 is a very impressive thing. And, but I think that Dwight Howard is just a high-grade underachiever in his career.
Brad Stevens has certainly had a lot of challenges this season with all of the injuries that have come the Celtics' way. And now the news that he's going to lose a member of his staff, Walter McCarty, going on to be a head coach in college.
Walter. He's paid his dues, God knows, and he's deserving of a shot. And I guess Evansville, he's taking the Evansville. Is that right? He's officially taking the Evansville job?
Yes.
Okay, good for him. Walter's a good fella. And, you know, it's funny, when he retired, his first goal was to get involved in music production. I don't know if you know that.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. He was going to be a music producer, I believe. Producer for sure. I don't know where he got sidetracked along the way, but maybe the love of basketball overwhelmed his love of music. And perhaps he still got his hand in it some way that I don't know about. But I'm happy for Walter. And we can still hear Tommy Heinsohn, can't we?
Yeah,
and, with Walter. But a member of the 96 champions who beat, we had like, I bet there was 6 or 7 NBA players on that roster, that team. And how many coaches? He's the second coach I know of. I know Mark Pope is coaching somewhere.
Yeah, I'm not sure where.
I think it's in Utah. Utah Valley State, somewhere like that.
We're talking with Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe here on Downtown. Bob, a wonderful piece over the weekend. If people missed it, go back and check it out to learn about sports cartoonist Gene Mack. I thought that was a fantastic story.
Well, that dropped into my lap, and boy, was I happy it did, because I went to the Globe in 68 and became aware of him almost immediately from the people who were still contemporaries who had worked with him. And his son, Gene Mack Jr., was also worked at the Globe. And I became in possession of the wonderful book, the 47 book, when the original one of Ballparks, and found out about the whole story about Gene Mack. And this is in the days, he wasn't hardly exclusive. This is in the days, in the first 55 or 60 years of the 20th century, in addition to sports writing, sports cartoonists proliferated throughout America, and cities large and small. And they chronicled the goings-on of sport in artistic manner long before we knew anything about the current means of communication. And they were very important, and nobody in Boston, there were some other famous ones in Boston, Bob Coyne of the Boston Herald, or Record American, and then Eddie Germano, who's still active, and Phil Bissell, who created the Patriots, original Patriot logo. We had Larry Johnson at the Globe for years, probably the last one around. But Gene Mack was the king. And his ballpark stuff is just absolutely and totally phenomenal. But it wasn't just the ballparks. He did game by game. He did high schools. In fact, in the aftermath of it, someone sent me an email and included posting the copy of a cartoon that Gene Mack had done about a local high school that this guy had played, had played in the team, and he profiled the team. It was part of the deal in those days, and it's something that's sorely missed in today's sports papers.
Bob, we're 1 week away from another chance to start up what some wise man has called the greatest game ever to spring from the mind of mortal man. Is there cause to be optimistic about this Red Sox season?
Absolutely. I mean, as most teams, you need to knock on the door, get good health. They didn't have it last year with David Price. They didn't get his services. But I like the way spring is shaped up so far. Granted, we don't know who the fourth and fifth starters will be to start the season. We trust that in the long run it'll be Rodriguez and Stephen Wright, or Pomerantz as six guys for five. But I love the top of the rotation on paper with Sale, Price, and Porcello. I think Porcello will probably split the difference between his Cy Young year in 16 and his miserable year last year when he led the world in homers given up. I like the lineup. It's not the Yankee power lineup, but it's a lineup that if your worst hitter in this lineup is going to be a toss-up between whoever catches and probably Vasquez, who I love, and Jackie Bradley Jr., that's a good lineup. And that may very well be the case, that will be the they're going to have a pesky, difficult lineup to pitch to with, of course, a better power production this year thanks to Martinez, and I think you'll see better power from a few other people. Hanley Ramirez right now looks on target to come back and have a decent year. So I'm enthused about them. You know, they got the best defensive outfield in the American League. I don't know about baseball. I won't go that far. I can't say. But I know it's the best defensive outfield in the American League. Defensive infield, yes, it could be better. And we hope that those guys are going to play better. I didn't even mention Devers in general. I'm really excited about him. And how about the spring that Ben Attendee's having?
Yes.
He's got an OPS at last I looked. It was around 12, which is phenomenal. I'm excited. And Alex Cora, every day I pick up the paper and he's saying something intelligent, at least to my eyes and ears. I'm really excited about him.
Do they have to have a big year out of David Price to be successful?
Yes, they do. They have to be ultimately successful. And, of course, if they get into the playoffs, what happens in October will determine legacies. But, yes, they need a big year out of him. And I think he seems to be more relaxed this year. He's not fighting Boston. If he was doing so, I think he was. I think he's settled in now, finally, after the third year. And I'm excited about it. And Sale, they're trying to maintain him. They're trying to have him not flame out in August and September, and they're very careful how they're using him. So I'm very excited. And of course, the Yankees are going to be a wonderful, you know, they are going to be a wonderful story, not to in the eyes of the Red Sox fans, but as they bash home runs, and they will. There's no way that they won't hit 220 to 240 home runs with that lineup.
Bob, as a newspaper guy, obviously there's a big story brewing in Boston with the future of the Herald being a bit uncertain. And you mentioned a time when there were several other newspapers in the Boston market. Even as a guy who's toiled with the Globe for a half century or so, how important has it been to have a competing paper in that town?
Number one, we're all on borrowed time. Anybody that doubts it is not reading the tea leaves. Newspapers as we know them will not survive too much farther into the 21st century. I'll be happily surprised. In fact, if I can just outlive it, if I can live long enough, that it doesn't happen before I go. I'm happy to have the Herald survive. I think we are so lucky to have two papers, and not just because of the personal relationships that we all have with our colleagues, and I'm a good friend of Steve Buckley's. I admire many of their people, the jobs that they do, so I'm happy about that. But the idea of journalism being served in a best competitive way is where everybody in Boston benefits. And Boston is one of the very, very, very few remaining legitimate two newspaper towns. Mm. There are some cities where they have joint operating agreements in a business sense and little edit, but very few legitimate competing dailies in America, and Boston is fortunate to be one of those remaining cities.
You inspired me. I saw your post on Twitter about hearing Chet Baker on Sirius XM, and I went back and listened to some of the work he did, particularly My Funny Valentine with Jerry Mulligan and that incredible quartet.
Oh, absolutely. But what a story, Jerry, because it's been done, and it's going to be done again, I think. It'll always be done. There's the story of Chet Baker, who was a druggie, but so many of them were, went to Europe, got involved, got his teeth bashed in a fight somewhere, in the Netherlands, messed up his embouchure for his trumpet playing for the rest of his life, died way too young, was a tremendous singer. I've got three or four albums of Chet Baker. I cannot hear enough of Chet Baker. And it's a sad story because it was a wasted life, a phenomenal talent.
Yeah, and when he came back, well, not when he came back, but his comeback occurred when he was in Europe, and even though he had gone through with a change in his embouchure, got fitted with false teeth, but had some of his most productive work not long before his death in the 70s and 80s.
No, that's true. It's a depressing story, because he was so good. I mean, we're not talking about just a run-of-the-mill, 285 hitter. We're talking about a Hall of Famer in the world of jazz, and the combination, the two great trumpet-playing singer, trumpet players, of course, the greatest of all, Louis Armstrong, who was as influential as a singer in the eyes of many as he was as a trumpet player, and that's considerable. But the other would be Chet Baker. There were a few others who sang a little bit. I know Doc Cheatham did, and Doc Cheatham, it went into his 90s. I've got a wonderful album with he and Nicholas Payton when Payton was still in his 20s, I think. But nobody like Chet Baker. I said he was the king of melancholy. Nobody could sing melancholy better than Chet Baker.
No doubt about that. Love the podcast conversation with Gary Williams. Who's coming up on the next one?
The next one, we were postponed last night because of the weather here. We were worried about the roads and having people on the road and our engineers show up and everything. We had to postpone it. And so I lost a date with my oldest and best friend in the business, Dick Weiss, the Hoops. We were going to have aiming for a PhD level basketball talk. We're going to have to reschedule him. Next week it'll be Dana Barros. Who, of course, is a Boston guy through and through, high school at Xaverian High School, Boston College, eventually played with the Celtics, although his best days were with Philadelphia. Dana, who was also recruited by 35 schools for football, now has got a nice new athletic facility that he's opened up, but a quality guy and a wonderful career, and of course one of the great three-point shooters of all time. So I'm excited about having Dana Barros next week.
We always look forward to Bob Ryan's podcast and always look forward to having you on the show. Bob, thanks as always for being with us.
You're welcome, Rich.
Thanks again, Bob. Appreciate
it. That's great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye
now. Okay, bye-bye.